This is the Chad Little Podcast.
My guest is a staff writer for The Athletic Atlanta, Seth Emerson. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Chad.
So, a lot of this interview, we'll discuss The Athletic, but before we jump into discussing The Athletic, I want to go back to the early days of your career when you worked for print newspapers. Tell me, what was it like to work for print newspapers?
Well, it was what I did early in my career, and 2 years ago, in fact. The way it worked was before the internet, 20, 25 years ago, I mean, the internet was there, but it was just sort of something that it was like, okay, we'll take our story that's going in the newspaper and throw it online to who cares. All anyone cared about was the printed product. You worried about deadlines and you had a story to write and you had to get it done by 7, 8 o'clock at night so that the copy desk had time to read it. And then it appeared the next day in paper. And you did not work on a 24-hour cycle like we do now. Things slowly changed over the years, and it was the internet plus print. And now print is really going away, as everybody has noticed. And it's long since been a 24-hour cycle. You have something, throw it up there, especially if it's breaking news or just kind of a reactive piece. But what I like about what we've been doing at The Athletic is, even though we're internet only, we're kind of getting back to the good part of the print mentality, which is that you do work on one story a day, more than one, if you know there's news that's breaking and you need to write more than one story, but we don't feel the pressure to have page views. So we're taking our time and we're writing quality stories rather than 4 or 5 a day, and turn it into the editor and they post it the next morning in the paper, which is for us the app or the website at The Athletic. And the feedback we've gotten from readers is they like it. They like not thinking that they miss something, that they just will be able to go to their app at their convenience, whether it's the next morning or lunchtime or the evening, and say, okay, what did Seth write today? What did Jeff Schultz write today? What did Dave O'Brien write today? And so on. And so the feedback's been good, and it's also been pretty enjoyable to work on that schedule.
I subscribe to The Athletic, and that is exactly the reason I subscribe. It's quality over quantity. There's so many sports websites now, and now Sports Illustrated, it appears that it's going to be heading toward the just as many page views as possible, almost like a clickbait website. And I don't even go to those websites for sports because I want in-depth quality reporting. And like you said, The Athletic, that's what you do, but there's so many free sites, but I don't know. There's so much media now. I believe there is a great need for websites like The Athletic that provides quality journalism.
Right. And you have to give, if people are going to pay a subscription when there's all these free websites out there, you have to give them something different and you have to give them something better. So that is what we strive to do, which creates challenges. The pushback you get from people is, well, why would I pay for something that's out there for free everywhere? Well, that's why we at The Athletic don't obsess over breaking news. We don't obsess over being the first to report something that once we report it, everyone else will report it in due time, you know, very quickly. That's the way it works these days. But what we strive to do is to do the best second story, not do a story breaking that, I mean, we'd love to get the story, but for an example, if, you know, when Georgia was looking for its new offensive coordinator after Jim Chaney had left, you don't try to, I mean, we do try to break the story that James Coley is being promoted. As it turns out, Kirby Smart ended up kind of breaking it himself on his Twitter feed. I didn't obsess over that, but I had what I hoped was an insightful story that was saying, here's what it means that James Coley is the new offensive coordinator. And you do that with kind of all news. And that's our approach. And so far, it seems to be well received.
So how are Georgia Bulldogs game days different for you now working at The Athletic versus traditional print publications?
I got this question actually from my mailbag, and I put in the same amount of time. I leave my house at the same time, which is usually 3 to 4 hours before kickoff. We're recording this a couple days before Georgia plays South Carolina at noon. I'll leave my house around 8:30. And I did that before. And I'll be one of the last to leave the press box writing my story. And that hasn't changed. But what has changed is that in between, I'm not writing and posting as many stories. In the old days, I would, when I was writing for the AJC, even the Macon Telegraph, you were writing multiple stories, sometimes a half dozen off of a football Saturday. Now at the Athletic, I'm writing one story. They're pretty adamant about that, that just write one story after everything is done. And after you've taken everything that is in, it can be a long story, 1500, 2000 words even, but only write one. We don't want to be a website that clutters people with headlines and different stories and different angles. We want to write the best stories. And if you're only writing one story, the chances are you're writing your best possible for that one, rather than kind of spreading your creativity and quotes around 5 or 6 different stories.
That's another reason I love reading The Athletic, is because there's no ads, so there's not a lot of clutter. It's a very clean app. It's just text, maybe some photos, but you're not being bombarded with all of these ads for everything. It's just, it from a reader perspective, being someone that's just using the app to read it and comparing it to other websites, it makes for a more enjoyable experience, not having all of the clutter, and you can just read the text.
Yeah, and that's another thing that we have the benefit for. And when people say, well, why would we pay for this? The other argument we make is, all right, go to, and I think Sports Illustrated, SI.com was kind of the worst with this, and I'll cite them, but I think there's other places. In fact, where I used to work, I would see a story that I wrote and I thought it was a really good story that had a good flow. And I would, as I was rereading it on the website, I would see it interrupted by an ad and it would annoy me because I'd say, well, I had a good transition there. I had a good quote and it's getting interrupted by an ad. And I know that as a reader, reading other people's websites and works, I feel the same way. I mean, besides sports, I'm interested in politics. And when I read certain sites and they get interrupted by ads, it takes away from the experience. And so what we tell people is, yeah, you have to pay on the front end, but it's kind of like Netflix. You don't have to watch any commercials. You don't have to, like with your DVR, you don't even have to scroll forward past the ads. You pay to get Netflix, but once you're in, you're not dealing with any ads and commercials. And that's another benefit to our product.
And I believe Netflix, Spotify, these services where you have to pay for quality content has helped to pave the way for websites like The Athletic, because you have a situation now where people are once again becoming accustomed and okay with paying for content. I'm 33. Yeah. I grew up in the Napster generation where people just downloaded music for free from the internet. And then iTunes came along and Netflix came along and people realized, hey, I could download this song for free and it could be poor quality, or I could pay $1 and it would be great quality. And because of those services, you have the ability now where people are willing to pay for The Athletic, where maybe 15 years ago, they might not would have been willing to pay a subscription for a website like The Athletic. I'm going back to the 90s and thinking about newspaper websites where they just gave everything away for free on their website.
Right.
And, you know, looking back now, the past 10, 15 years, if they would have back then got people in the habit of paying a subscription, where could the newspaper industry be right now?
Yeah, and that's the mistake that they made, was they didn't put enough value in the internet when it first came out and said, oh, you know, so we'll just put everything we're writing on the internet. And the internet was free. And so what it did is it established that news was supposed to be for free and content on the internet was supposed to be for free. So you the longer you go, 5, 10, 15, 20 years away from the 90s, you had people just being used to the idea that it was for free. I mean, you never really had to pay for it at all. And you also have people who are now in college or even older in their 20s who have just never read a newspaper, but have always subsisted on reading online, and it was always free. So it is a hard sell for people to say, no, now you got to pay, and you got to pay at the Athletic, and other places are starting to pay, but more places are starting to charge a subscription because they're figuring out that they're not making enough money off of ads, and that people are, when it comes down to it, or at least enough people are willing to pay to read content.
Yeah. And some of these websites, and it's not just sports, but political websites, news websites, the ones that are free, some of them, they've got so many ads and clutter. I just gave up reading them because it's just not worth having to deal with the full page ads while you're popping up, while you're trying to read an article, you're in the middle of something, then right in the middle of the page, you know, like you mentioned, there's an ad. It's just not an enjoyable experience. And I just wonder, as people become more accustomed to paying for content, these free, almost like clickbait websites, what's going to happen to them? Because I much would rather pay for content that's from a quality writer like the Athletic staff, like you, than go read some free website and it's written by someone that's inexperienced. They're cheap. The quality of the content is an amateur. You know, not that there's anything wrong with gaining experience working your way up, you know, college students and young people. That's a great experience for them. But if I want to read quality, I'm not going to turn to these free websites. I wonder in the future, are we going to head more toward a model online where you pay versus just getting it for free?
I've been wondering that, where when I made this leap about a year and a half ago, I was making kind of a leap of faith and I was saying, all right, I'm going somewhere where everything's going to be behind a paywall. And that means that there's going to be limits of people. You know, there's going to be people who say, all right, I'm out. I don't read you anymore. And there were some of that, but a lot of people have made the jump. And it's gotten to the point where a year and a half later, after making this leap of faith, that even you see traditional newspapers now are going to subscription models on their websites. Because again, they're looking at the bottom line and saying, well, this isn't working, the ad rate culture or model. So they're trying to the subscription model. And is it going to move more towards, there are more subscriptions websites than there are the current, you know, main ad rate model. And then just people start going more towards the advertising model again. I don't know. The market is going to decide it. And We'll see. I mean, I'm here to find out. I just know that I was so demoralized about the state of the newspaper business for years, being inside it and seeing cutbacks and layoffs and everything. And I was fortunate to be somebody who was never laid off myself, but I was in newsrooms where I saw my friends being laid off for no fault of theirs. It was the market, the business. They were losing money. And I didn't feel like newspapers had vision. They weren't making the right moves. Whereas now at the Athletic, you feel like someone out there is trying something different and it's working. Is it going to work long term? We'll see. But so far it is working. And I'm just glad that somebody has tried this, because somebody had to try it after 20, 25 years, a generation or more really of the internet content being free, like we were saying, and people expecting that, but people not making money off of it. Someone had to say, all right, we're going to bite the bullet and be the one to try this. And that's what the Athletic was. I mean, they're not the very first subscription site, obviously, but they were really the first national sports one that did it. And they did it, you mentioned, you know, younger writers, and you read people that obviously are new and just not as refined. The Athletic didn't do it by hiring those people on the cheap. They said, if we're going to do this, we're going to try and go out and hire established people who people know, so that, you know, just using my own example on the Georgia beat, they didn't hire someone who was young and talented, but still young, and they could hire them for cheap. They said, no, we're going to go hire someone who's established on the beat, so that Georgia fans will say, well, I'm going to pay to read this guy. And they've done that in every market. And sometimes they don't get the first choice, but they do eventually get somebody that's pretty good. And so it was kind of that was the big leap of faith by the founders at the Athletic and people running the show, was not only were they going to go for the hard route of charging subscriptions, but they were going to do it by throwing money at people like me who were already established, so that they had a lot of overhead, but they were aiming to still make money.
Well, I believe that is one of the reasons that the Athletic has been successful so far, is because they went out and they got well-known, established names that already had a following on social media, on Facebook, for the publication they were writing for. And plus, right, what that did too is it gave the website instant credibility. It's names you can trust. It's names that you know that you'll be reading on this website. So that really, I believe, that's what really helped it to grow as quickly as it has, is because they went out and spent the money and they got the names, and it really helped to establish their credibility.
And let's also be honest, not only did they hire people away via like paying more for people like me, but there was also a pretty good list of sports writing free agents out there because of all the cutbacks in the business. Stuart Mandel, my boss, who was really the first person at the Athletic for college football, was aiming to start his own website because of the pivot to video thing that had happened at Fox Sports. And Stuart had gone to Fox after leaving Sports Illustrated. And so he was available. Ken Rosenthal on baseball was available. He was employed by Fox Sports, but Fox Sports had done this pivot to video thing, so they didn't need Ken Rosenthal writing anymore. And Ken said, well, I want to write. So he was available. And that's repeated itself with other people. Seth Davis for the Athletic college basketball. I think he was let go at Sports Illustrated, one of many people. And every one of these people was not let go because they weren't good. They still remained some of the best in their field. They were let go because of the nature of the business. And so the Athletic swoops in and hires these people who are available, and combines that with hiring people like me who made themselves available because of various things going on at their own business that go back to the newspaper model not working as much anymore.
Yeah, let's talk about the local sports page. Last week, at the time we're recording this podcast, the Waycross Journal-Herald in Waycross, Georgia, announced they're closing down. They just financially cannot stay in business. So now you have Waycross, which has a popular, beloved high school football team there, the Gators. Now they're going to be without a local newspaper where people can turn to read news about not only what's happening in their community, but also local sports, what's happening with local athletes in the local community. So with newspapers shutting down in small markets across the United States, and we're now having a situation where we have what are called news deserts, where there's communities that no longer have a local newspaper. Mm-hmm. In the future, where are fans going to go to obtain that local content if the newspaper's not there? What's the future for local sports journalism?
That's a great question, and I don't know. And it's a need that needs to be serviced, because
And I say this as somebody who grew up in this business covering local sports, high school sports. I didn't just start covering SEC football. My first job out of college was at the Washington Post covering high school sports. And yeah, I was covering soccer, field hockey, softball, baseball, in addition to the usual football and basketball. Then I went to the Albany, Georgia city that everyone, I'm sure you're listening to this, knows. And in addition to covering big time stuff while I was in Albany for 3 years, like Georgia and the Braves and the Falcons, I covered local high school sports that has a huge passionate fan base. It's just very local. And so what happens is that these, I worked for the Macon Telegraph for 5 years. They're basically non-existent as covering local high school sports, despite all the great high schools in the area. I mean, it's where Jake Fromm went, because they're going on a page view model. And they say, well, when we cover such and such, when we cover high school sports, we don't get that many page views. Whereas you cover Georgia, you'll get a bunch of page views because there's so many fans of Georgia. Now, there's a lot of fans of high school football or high school basketball, high school sports in general, but they tend to be fans of a specific school. So then it becomes a manpower issue. You don't have 50 people to go out and cover your 50 local schools. And it's the same thing when it comes to covering non-sports thing. I'm talking a lot about sports because that's my specialty, but what about local watchdog reporting? Where I live locally, I live in the Athens suburb, Watkinsville. We get the Oconee Enterprise, local newspaper, and they actually do a good job of covering the city council meetings and what's going on with, we have a mayoral race and some other things. That's how we find out things. And I read what's going on with the local football teams too. And you'd hate for that to go away, because if that goes away, the watchdog journalism goes away, and you and I both know that means that the local politicians are going to get away with more. And that can't happen. It's just, how do you keep it alive? It becomes a market thing. I mean, how many people out there are there? I'm 43. My wife is 41. So we're kind of in that demographic where we're still going to be around for a while. We're not, you know, the 60s and the 70s, people in their 60s and 70s who, you know, will never give up a newspaper. I've given up writing for a newspaper, but I'll still get it because I want the news. But will their model work? Are there enough people out there like us? I don't know.
It's a tough question, and I'm not really sure what the right answer is. You know, I enjoy reading local news and staying up to date about what is occurring in the local community, but it's getting, depending on where you live, a lot of people are losing their local paper, so now they're turning to Facebook or Twitter, online sources. But how do we know those online sources are accurate, credible? It's a tough situation local news are finding themselves in right now.
Yeah, and I was in that for years, wondering how it was going to survive. And I hate to say it, I'm glad I'm not in it anymore. I mean, we've got our own uncertainties, but it's something that is necessary. And people have talked about, like, the government basically underwriting it, sort of like NPR. That gets a little bit back to, well, part of the reason we need these newspapers to survive is for watchdog journalism. Do you want the government that would be the, you know, watchdog to be the one paying for it? It's a tough thing, but it's a shame that the Waycross paper is going away. I mean, you need local journalism because, like I said, that's what keeps people honest. Governments, businesses, they need to be kept honest. And that's what the media is supposed to do. And when there's no local media to do that, is it just some, you know, local citizen or a group of citizens on Facebook getting together and Facebooking or tweeting that something is going on? I mean, it's, then you get into matters of how are these people verified? What, you know, who's there to verify? Who's there to pay attention to bring light to the issues that are being presented? That's why we need local media.
And one, well, not one, a couple of final questions. With young people, Generation Z, millennials, that's me, they're consuming media in different ways now. And some sports are increasing in popularity among young people, esports, for example, which, me personally, that's not really my thing, to sit around and watch other people play video games, but it's very popular with people my age and younger. So looking into the future, in the future, what are some sports that might not be popular right now, but could gain in popularity that The Athletic could possibly be covering in the next couple of years?
Well, next couple of years, I don't know. I mean, I've had trouble also kind of wrapping my head around the esports business and how popular it is. I don't know. I'm not really qualified to talk about that. I wonder about 10, 15, 20 years down the line, what happens with football, a sport that, you know, is getting a lot of attention for safety reasons, and the participation numbers are decreasing. And does that go, does that funnel into other sports? I don't know if there's any more sports. I do wonder where we are in about 15, 20 years in overall interest and participation. Does football, which is this behemoth now, start to lose some interest? It's already losing some athletes to other sports, but does it start to lose also interest? Do basketball and baseball catch up even more? I mean, I think in their own way, they're already there with football, just a little bit behind. Does soccer make a run? Does anything else come out of the four?
And final question before I let you go, I'm sure you got to cover some Georgia Bulldogs happenings. So, well, since I mentioned the Bulldogs, do you cover the Bulldogs year round? Just football, basketball, baseball, all sports?
Football, some basketball, and not really baseball at this point. Football and basketball, especially football, kind of take up all our time.
Well, because of the internet now, because of ESPN 24-hour cable channels, it's a year-round topic now. It's not just fall. It is the draft and spring training. So it is a year-round sport now.
It is, and it keeps us busy all around. There's never a question of whether we'll have enough content covering this, because there's so much interest. I mean, you can write something in the off season, practically anything about Georgia, and people will read it.
All right, final question. Of all the sports moments that you've covered in your career, that you've been able to write about, what has been your favorite moment that you've been able to write about, to cover?
It's tough to not say the big games that especially lately have happened on Georgia, as far as the national championship, the Rose Bowl, the Notre Dame game 2 years ago, the 2012 SEC championship, all those. There's so many, but I've always said that the most intense atmospheres I've ever been at are, and this is off the radar for a lot of people around here, but are small conference college basketball championship games, because the winner is going to the NCAA tournament, which is the pinnacle for these people. It's what they're all shooting for, not just to get into the tournament and win like Mercer did a few years ago, but to just be Mercer, to get in there. But the loser of that conference championship game goes home. They don't get it. And I've covered some intense games. I covered George Mason against UNC Wilmington when I was working for the Washington Post. I think it was 2001. And George Mason won the game 35-33. And on TV, it looked like the worst played, because it was so low scoring, game that anybody had ever seen. But in person, it was just so intense. That's off the radar. A lot of people can't really identify with that, but those to me are the most, just that's what stands out to me.
Seth, I really appreciate you taking time to join me today. And you can read Seth's stories on The Athletic and follow him on Twitter at Seth Emerson. Until next time, I'm Chad Whittle. Thanks for listening to the Chad Whittle Podcast.
Subscribe to the Chad Whittle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, or listen at chadwhittle.com. The Chad Whittle Podcast with Chad Whittle. Copyright 2019. All rights reserved.